Ship's computer to all personnel. This is an emergency override. All systems must stand by. For your listening enjoyment, we now present
the Disco!
Against trains, London Transport trains, not only against trains but on stations and other property belonging to London Transport.
Every time I get in the train, almost every day I see my name. I say, yeah, you know what, I was there, I wanted it.
Hey, you see that? That tags are little black letters on little white cards of paper. My tags running in Brooklyn, the Bronx, Queens, right now. In every borough, on every line. It's 8 feet high and it's beautiful.
This is it. This is it. This is it.
On the bus in London. I'm Mike Allen, and we're just moments away from a kiss in the car.
Disco Scratch Radio, bringing you the deafest beats, rhymes, bass lines from the UK old school.
People, Disco Scratch Heads back in the house for another interview special with No Sleep Nigel. This is part two. You may recall last time we were on, we were just discussing the Hardcore One LP, and specifically the cut Control by Q-Tips and Dashy D, my favourite all-time UK cut. So thanks for tuning in. You're live on Sensi FM only tonight, because they're doing a takeover show on freestyle, so it's Sensi.fm. So we're going to stick with the Sensi.fm chat room tonight. So get yourself over there, just Sensi.fm, you'll see the chat going on. All right, so launching straight back into this, and we're going to be discussing the tail end of the last show and progressing with No Sleep Nigel. Stay locked. Peace. Right, welcome back to Disco Scratch Radio. In the depths of interview tonight with No Sleep Nigel, and we're just discussing off air while we played that about the fact that we never got through to the actual root cause of why he's in fact called No Sleep Nigel. So, should we finish off that story before we continue?
Yeah, it was actually on the Hardcore One album, and sorry, I'm. Yeah, it was actually the Hardcore One album that occurred during that time. We were kind of pushed. We'd done some of the work at the Bromley studio, and then we had to do the rest of the album in a very short time in my new workplace, Cold Storage. I think we had about 2 days sessions. I mean, I think the first 2 days were actually for free, because it was a good way for me to learn about the studio.
Mm.
And also we'd be kind of getting some progress done. So we got 2 days, and we just virtually worked for 48 hours.
Right.
And where other people were just kind of wasted, you know, but Sparky was there.
Yeah.
Dexter was there. I think Can stayed the course as well.
Yeah.
Mello might have been around for some of the time.
Mm.
But basically, the first time the No Sleep Nigel name appeared was because of that 48-hour session.
Right.
What's on Coming Correct.
Yeah. So that's
on 12.
Hardcore One, really.
They said, we're going to call you No Sleep Nigel. He told me. I didn't give myself that. I was given that name.
Yeah.
Sparky and Mello. I don't know who came up with it, but it was from that camp, and it ended up on the first time that name was ever used was on.
So, you know, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. That's the root of the legend, the living legend. I would imagine that anybody listening to this that's not familiar with the Hardcore One LP, who will now be seeking it out, will find that it's very hard to get hold of, or, you know, for sort of a reasonable price. And Discogs people will be putting their price up as we speak, probably. So it'll be interesting to see what happens after this.
Yeah, well, I'm glad I got my copy.
Yeah. Do you know how many were pressed, actually?
It probably wasn't more than a couple of thousand, if you're lucky.
Yeah.
You know, I really don't... I would think that maximum it was 2,000, something like that.
Mm.
It's more likely to have been 1,000.
Right, yeah, I mean...
I couldn't tell you for certain, but I'm just thinking back there. There would have been a possibility of more. It could have even been an initial release of 500, seeing how it went, for another 500 to come out.
Yeah.
I don't know how much the demand would have been for it, particularly as it was kind of a venture on the part of the guy that was running the label. As you can see, its catalog number is number 2, and the first was a house record, which you know. And the problem for British UK hip-hop at that point was it did get kind of sidelined by the house music stroke techno rave scene, which became the centre of all things dance. And of course, hard BPM was a, from the name you can tell, it's a dance music label. And there wasn't a lot of interest in hip-hop suddenly. There was this thing of the Rare Groove and hip-hop just having a little place in London mid 80s or so. And then suddenly, and I can remember being at a place where one of the DJs was a house music DJ, and everyone just cleared the dance floor. And he actually said out loud, he goes, "Oh, you know, in 6 months' time, you lot are going to be gagging for this." And he was right. He was right. You know, like, and suddenly there wasn't a place for rare groove or hip hop, even in London, which had been the only place where that had happened, because like it had just gone from high energy to house in a lot of other places in the country.
Yeah, yeah.
There, you know, hip hop had never been there, but London was kind of a place where it could have started, and suddenly all the dance labels were interested in this new music.
Did you ever find that, I mean, a lot of people I know that were into hip-hop back then started to find that they were going to, like, events in the rave scene. Well, some of them were, but some of the other guys I know were starting to go to, like, jungle raves. I mean, did you ever kind of cross over into the jungle scene at all, especially with your history and knowledge of dub and stuff, which is very influential in jungle?
Of course, I was aware of those things. To be honest, I didn't really sort of follow. I have done a couple of drum and bass things with LTJ Bookham and a couple of other people that maybe aren't so well known, but like Endemic Void. But I was in the middle, at that point, I was in the midst of the sort of the UK hip hop scene, which was an underground thing that just kept me going. And there was still enough momentum that I kind of stayed in that line.
Yeah.
For those years. But the interesting thing is it was people like Gus Reinforced, who had done a track on Mello's album. In fact, I think he did a couple of tracks on Mello's Thoughts Released album.
Mm.
Who went off and started Reinforced Records. And to entertain himself, he kind of started mucking around with this rave stuff he was doing, which because he knew that he wanted to make some money out of what he was doing.
Uh-huh.
But you know, in doing so, he started to put stuff in to entertain himself and help to sort of create a genre sort of thing. The same thing with LTJ Bookham. You know, he came from hip-hop. Yeah. You know, they were speeding breaks up. You know, I used to walk into studios where someone was playing one of those early rave records where they had, what's it called? The Tommy Rowe break. Doom. It goes like that anyway. It's one of those, what's it called? If I put Tommy Rowland, it will come up straight away, the one I'm talking about. Let's find out what this break is.
You've managed to embarrass me of my not knowledge of breaks now, even though
when you hear the name of it, you'll know exactly which one I'm talking about, because it's a very famous break. Because Tommy Rowe's known for a song called Dizzy. I mean, like, as Tommy Rowe, but no, it hasn't come up there. Sweet Pea.
I don't know it. I can't think of it.
Sweet Pea break. Anyway, it was used a lot in rave anyway. I mean, but I used to come in and these records would be on 45 and I just flip them down to 33 and it turned into a hip hop record.
I mean, getting back to the whole UK thing and what was going on, sort of following on from Hardcore One. You can't mention UK hip hop without mentioning Blade.
Blade. Lyrical Blade. Maniac, Blade. Maniac, Blade. Lyrical. Blade. Many people Blade. Hear it, Blade. Think it's Blade. A miracle. Blade. Miracle, Blade. Musical, Blade. Maybe get physical.
Go, Blade, go!
Reaching the pinnacle. Put your ears to the one, come on, come on. Put your ears to the one, yeah.
Disco Scratch Radio.
Silence.
subway. What they all say, still we walk and talk the same way. Not committing, crime forgetting. Below the law and now they're fretting. Hell we're going deeper, deeper. Not the weaker, yes we're eager. Louder, louder, raise the level. Not the silent, fucking also. Yeah, boy, come raise the hard noise. The boys could you handle? Six to angle, never single. Higher, higher, yeah, you praise it. How we phrase it, now he says it. Moses sees you faking, chuck the roses, how do you feel? Don't even question the real deal. Radio play 'em, how can I say 'em? Play the Lord, but we don't obey 'em. Won't obey 'em, we refuse it. Forward with the music, come on. Get the point across, play the music, had to use it. Many confuse it to the bone as he works the finger. Hey to the motherfucker, K, huh? Straight on contemplating. Ignore the one possessed by Satan. Evil minded, people find it hard to accept, suit the climate. We go on and on and on and still we're coming. But it's running to the future, no addiction. Criminal records, no conviction. Press the charges, I don't think so. Leave alone, not the guilty, let go. Break the barrier, chip on my shoulder. Check the rear, groups are colder. The beholder, couldn't give a shit for.
Motherfuckers claiming they knew us.
Make the room for 2000 AD. Quiet, rush to get it. Come. Solo, so you swallow what we're saying. Soon you follow. Where's your heeding? What you needing? Never bluffing. Here's a warning. Yes, you get the humble, get to be going places, seeing faces. Some have the nerve to try to fuck with it.
Got to be in cut.
What we tell them, simple. It ain't drugs we sell them. No, don't even think about it. They can try, but they never can hold us back. Yes, we are. Come, come. No rejects, and they all get some. Rush the gates, never losing. Plus, we're living the way we're choosing. Sounds familiar, sounds incredible. Can you go for what's on the portable? Being played, who's it concerning? What are we earning? Tables turning, going against the forces of pain. Forces of evil thinking I'm insane. When the rules never there to be cracked. Honor the ethnic, honor the black. One, two, three, but the fact is ignorance never bliss motivated. Save the bullshit, temper, temper. Once again, renegade, enter.
Your fucking radio.
Hiya.
Duck alert.
Certainly, in terms of what I know about you, came from that, because I mean, you know, like a little credit on the back of an album like Hardcore One, I wouldn't have picked up. But Blade was always known to always mention you and always talk about you. And as I was talking to him last night, on Sunday, I mean, we were talking about when he first came down to Portsmouth and that. And I remember when I first met him and buying records off him at a jam in Brixton, like standing outside in like 1990 or something. And so kind of your name is synonymous with Blade's name in a lot of people's heads. So how did that meeting first come about with like the Lyrical Maniac EP, and did he approach you, or what was the situation with that?
He came down to Cold Storage, and I'm not sure exactly offhand. I can't remember the reasons for going down there. I don't think he was recommended to come down and find me, because he started working with someone else. He'd got some money from London Records and it might have been through London Records. They'd suggested that studio, or somehow or other, he ended up doing some stuff at Cold Storage.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons I ended up working at Cold Storage was because one of my favourite UK bands, in fact, maybe my favourite UK band of all time, was a band called This Heat.
Mm.
And Cold Storage was their studio. Before it became a commercial studio, it was like a, it was the a place, a collective, which was connected with both This Heat and another band that you may or may not have heard of called The Raincoats.
No, I don't know them.
Who are kind of legendary, what is known as post-punk bands, although like This Heat are kind of pre-punk, really. They were just sort of heading in a new direction at around the same time, and but their music's described as post-punk. Mm. But as a result of them having set the studio up, one of the people that was still one of the people working there was a former member of the band, Charles Bullen, and I was kind of new there, and he kind of called me up and said, you know, he was kind of trying to work with Blade and kind of figured that maybe I'd sort of get into this a lot quicker. So he phoned me up and said, I'm doing this session and I think you should be doing it.
Right.
Because, yeah, I think clearly Blade had ended up at Cold Storage by coincidence.
Yeah.
From what I can remember, you could probably find this out from him directly.
Yeah.
And so I came down and that was it.
Okay.
We worked on Lyrical Maniac and, you know, that first 12.
That's such a classic. It's such a, I mean, the imagery and everything about that. In fact, you are guilty of working on most of the records in my top 10 hip-hop records, actually, of all time, UK. A couple of cuts, one of which is, as far as I'm concerned, right, the control that 12, well, control track we spoke about earlier, to me defines the funkier, lyrically wicked side of UK. Then when you progress to the Hard Noise 12 Untitled that you worked on, that is like, how could I put it? It epitomises the sort of, well, what is classed now as Britcore, which wasn't even known back then. That term,
well, of course,
wasn't used,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But I mean, that particular 12 Untitled, by the way, the white label of that goes for upwards of 100 quid at the moment, under £250,
which is my mix of it.
I didn't know that.
What people don't understand is that we recorded that in Cold Storage, and then the white label got interest, and I wasn't around or something like that. They went to Joe's Garage and somebody or other mixed it, and it's only recently that I was reminded that my mixes had survived. In fact, I found them. I've actually got the original DATs here.
Ah, right.
And I think maybe something will come of that at some point in the not too distant future.
Have you been approached by somebody then about doing something like this?
I've talked to two members of Hard Noise separately. It was just like completely coincidentally last year. AJ and TLP1.
Yeah.
Both contacted me separately around the same time last year, probably around this time last year.
Uh-huh.
I haven't spoken to them since. That's kind of weird, but it was left that they know that I've got the original DAT rights from which that white label was made. And the reason why the white label changes hands, because it is a different mix.
It's got a longer intro. I think it's got an 8-bar intro instead of the 4-bar one. I've played it on the show. I haven't got it, but I've got it as a vinyl rip, and I've played it on the show a few times.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I approached TLP1 for an interview back when I was, well, that was about 3 or 4 years ago, and he was up for it, and he was, you know, ready to do something, but you know how it goes with the internet. You make a connection and then you lose information and then it's all gone. And I have recently tried to contact him again, but because there's a track that they did before Untitled, God, Pure Destructive Power, right? And everybody is gagging to hear that and wants it released. And I want to talk about putting it out with them. I want to try and put it out on Disco Scratch Records, if possible. But I don't... I mean, I know Blade's heard it, and I think Blade's got it on tape. But most people don't know that track. I mean, they haven't heard it. So, do you know anything about that? Did you work on that track?
No, I don't. I was just about to say that is brand new news to me. I can't recall that. I know that when I'm speaking with TLP1, it was AJ, that he talked about a lot of stuff that they'd done, I think maybe subsequent together, that they'd done subsequent to the Hard Noise stuff that had never been heard. I'm not sure about stuff before, though.
That's the only thing that I'm aware of that they did was that Pure Destructive Power. But you went on to sort of be a part of most of Blade's discography, to the best of my knowledge. I mean, looking through the first page of releases on Discogs, which from what I can gather from yourself doesn't contain everything you've worked on, but you know, like, certainly Blade's name is there numerous times. You know, you've got Kinetic Effect on there, Killer Instinct, Gunshot, London Posse. I mean, the London Posse album as well, Gangster Chronicle, is one of those landmark albums in the UK scene as well, you know.
Yeah.
Did you work on Mellow's first album as well?
Yeah, Thoughts Release was mostly me. There's one track that they did somewhere else called Open Up Your Mind.
Oh, no, that tune, yes. More of a soul-y sort of cut, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, cool. So, and that was the thing, was Gus did one track on the album, and then he also did Words Spoken on the 12, Reinforced. When I said that he'd done two tracks on the album, I just... Blacksmith, they called themselves.
Oh, God, that rings the vaguest of bells to me, but I can't...
Yeah, they'd done some stuff with Karen Wheeler and stuff like that, I know, as well, around that time.
Yeah, according to this, they've got three releases. Though it was Hugh Atkins, Carl Atkins and Pete Trotman.
Yeah, two brothers and another guy.
Blacksmith, blimey. Did they do remixes and stuff?
Yeah, I think they were kind of involved in a lot of remixes and stuff like that, but they were, you know, just trying to get themselves out there. You know, the fact that there's only like three releases is more indicative of the fact that nobody's working their Discogs, probably.
Yeah.
There's probably, there could be a bit more kind of connectivity and some more stuff maybe put there. Because these are actually things under their name. Somehow or other, it hasn't connected to any of their other stuff. Mm. And I don't even know what was happening with their other stuff. Their track, Open Up Your Mind, on the album and that 12, that was the only one that I wasn't involved with regard to Mellow's early output. And of course, the one that I'm really jealous about was Busy Rhyming. I wasn't involved in that either.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, everyone loves that track.
That's wicked, that cut, yeah.
And that was before I knew them.
Yeah. Something that does jump out at me with this era of your life and what you were doing was... there are, I mean, really, the biggest labels that were around back then, in terms of UK hip-hop, were kind of Cold Sweat and Musical Life. And other than the Hard Noise 12, you know, you haven't really worked on anything in their catalogue. And secondly, I can't see anything by Cold Sweat. And I wonder if there was any reason behind that.
Well, they were kind of in-house. They had their own in-house producers.
Yeah.
Mostly. Simon Harris was the producer for Music of Life, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean...
He kind of oversaw a lot of stuff there and, you know, like, he's...
I mean, they'd been around for a few years before Hard Noise. So how come you ended up being involved with the Hard Noise? I mean, both the Hard Noise 12s, because the Serve T Then Murder is like the disco scratch anthem, because that's what we do, you know, we're very English, and then we'll murder you with a sound afterwards. So we'll sit down and have a nice cup of tea with a pinky out, and then slaughter someone in the sound system. So so how come you worked on those?
Because probably the band wanted to work with me, and you know, maybe it was just an experiment on the part of Musical Life or whatever. They went with it, you know, because they were delivered something that was maybe a bit different to what they normally do. I'm sure that there was probably a connection with other stuff on Music of Life that was done by the same, you know, like was done by Marga. What was the Nights in Three Calls?
Burial proceedings in the course of three nights. Yeah. That was
because that was kind of cold. That was kind of Cold Sweat people working on Music of Life, wasn't it?
I don't know who engineered that.
I think that was kind of basically the Cold Sweat guys, you know, like it was like, because Marga from, what are they called?
Catch.
I mean, like he was kind of behind the scenes on a lot of the Cold Sweat stuff.
Yeah.
And I think he was probably behind the scenes on that record as well. So what I was saying about, I mean, like Simon Harris was farming stuff out, but Music of Life was basically him originally, I know.
It was, what's his name, Chris French, can't think of his name. God.
Who's this?
The other guy that did Music of Life with Simon Harris. I just can't think of his name. It's Chris someone.
I think the reason why my name doesn't sort of come up a lot on those is because a lot of the people that I work with were inspired by Blade or just purely the idea of being independent.
Yeah.
And brought out their own records. There was loads of people I worked with that were making their own records.
Yeah.
And had their own labels. And that's what they wanted to do, you know, that they kind of saw that as the way forward. I worked with loads of people like that, you know, because of course London Posse was on Island Records.
Yeah, it came out on their subsidiary on Mango.
But of course my connection there initially is that they were working with Sparky.
Yeah, oh yeah, of course, because he was their producer, wasn't he?
But then, you know, they introduced me to Devastate and that, you know, who'd been working with the Demon, you know, Demon Boys.
Yeah. Well, Devastate produced one of the cuts on the, or I think he might have worked on one or two of the tracks on the Gangster Chronicle LP. And you know, you've actually led me into something else I was going to say. It's a wonder how you haven't got any credits with stuff with the Demon Boys. Because, like, in my opinion, in terms of an actual crew, Demon Boys are up there with, like, Hijack, you know, and, like, Gunshot as the biggest crews. I love Demon Boys. Absolutely love them to bits. Practically every track on their album, I just love.
But he had a little crew and they were kind of, you know, it was those guys that had been involved with the original Demon Boys album, which I think even kind of that kind of predates my kind of involvement with the UK hip hop scene in a way. That was like one of our inspirations kind of thing.
Well, I'm hoping to get Sparky and that, like, interviews with them guys, and, like, you know, Business and Pogo and all those guys that are involved in the scene over the coming months and years, and whenever at some point I want to try and, you know, get them guys in interview and sort of try and equal this stuff out of them, you know, to sort of discuss it and get some meat on the bones of what we know about the Roots, you know.
Twilight Firm.
Oh, right.
Yeah, Twilight Firm. Who were kind of behind Demon Boy's album, Recognition.
Yeah.
It's good having Discogs here.
It is. But
I didn't see their name anywhere.
No.
I didn't see their name anywhere on the credits for Gangsta Chronicle.
Well, if you look at Twilight Firm together, it's his members, Brian B and Stevie G. And the only credit they've got is the British Underground EP on XL Recordings. I mean, I've got that.
All right, so Devastate was kind of working with them. Oh, I see. Yeah, see, I kind of thought they were a crew. So we've not actually represented any of this sort of my classic period at all, because like Hard But Live is like, and we've already explained, is like a sort of, it's proto No Sleep. I'm not even called No Sleep.
Yeah,
I only managed to get a Nigel credit, which I only managed to get on London Posse as well, by the way.
Yeah, so if that ever gets repressed, that album, let's make sure it's got your full credit on there.
I'm not sure if it did or not, because Source brought it out, didn't they? It was reissued on Source, wasn't it? And I never saw a copy of it from there.
Not sure. I mean, I've got the original.
It just goes engineered by Nigel, which I have asked people about that. I'm not quite certain what's going on there, because it's a bit of strangeness to me.
Well,
the thing is, I know it's not from the band, because of all the people that I, from that thing, the person I'm in most in contact with is Bionic.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, all right. Well, it's only logical then that we drop a track by the London Posse then, since we've discussed them a little bit now. My favourite cut of theirs is Beatbox Reggae Style. I love that.
Nothing to do with me, though.
I know, but that's my favourite cut, right? And then off the album, Money Mad, I love. Jump Around was a massive tune. I mean, back then I was going to a lot of the jams in London, and they used to get a really good response.
Yeah, well, Jump Around is Twilight Firm doing the music with me on the mix. I think we probably ended up doing that one at Joe's Garage. We might have started it at Cold Storage, but
Well, I'll tell you what then, how about we get into Jump Around, and I'm going to go straight back to back into a Blade cut that I haven't quite decided what I'm going to play yet. So I'm going to play Jump Around, and I'm going to have a think about it, and I'm going to play something back to back with that.
Well, you could be right up to date with the reissue, couldn't you, and do something off of Lion.
Here we go. This is Jump Around. You tune to Disco Scratch Radio with No Sleep Nigel in deep discussion tonight, and we're going to play it back to back with a Blade cut off the Lion LP, which has been reissued courtesy of Andy Cowan of Hip Hop Connection fame, which I will be putting links to because my mind has gone. Oh, originaldope.com. That's it.
And I'd just like to mention Jump Around by London Posse.
Yeah. There we go. All right, so back after this.
The Disco!
Style and a new direction, cause records of the alpha come into question.
commercial, we go commercial, never. Licking lyric pads, rough, wicked and clever. Plus, witty, a witty little ditty, cause the rappers are shitty. But see me, I'm from London City and I'm pondering. Pussy rappers best be humbling. Learn that from rhyme and stop stalling and stumbling. And acting like a fool, best to go school. Smoke says they cool, the London pussy rule. Wanna get me, boy, don't send a decoy. This ain't no quest for fame, my name ain't Leroy. We're using hip-hop, but me, I ain't a b-boy, I'm a roughneck. So you best to watch your step, because there's not enough people who come in. They get clapped, they make records, they make money. And then they sell out, I'm at this black coup. She said she love Luke Gross, I have to cuss the bitch and tell her he's off. And I spy her what he thought of that. He said
the bitch looks black and she needed a slap.
And I agree, yeah, I have to cuss some kind of gala indeed. They ask to the freak, they're part of speed. I don't lick no shit, I smoke weed. Cause it's the remedy for the black ass blue.
Is your main feature. You need to treat your wound with a dental. Leukocytes from a girl like me a panther. They go to rant and rave because they know that we do no rap on stage. And when we come off of the stage, we get the coots with ease while you go down on your knees saying pretty please to a Fräulein. My Fräulein said nine and jump on mine. May get me right for shine, that's why.
Stronger, make sure we kick. Two heads are better than one. Three makes a crowd, no dogs allowed. Don't sell your soul to the devil. 666 playing all kinds of tricks. Now we're here in the pack with the techniques and a couple of stand 500s. Living and boiling, wax we're burning. Respect we're earning, everyday learning. Something new, something old. The story is told, but they put you on hold. And I know I can make it last. You get a blast. You son of a bitch, you're licking ass. I never felt ready like this before. I'm paying a 10 here and there, this is war. Step down, get off the petty stool. I'm keeping myself cool, making my own rule. Switching from the 1 to the 3, 3. But if you work for them, then you don't know me. Big competitors and yellow oranges. Big fat mangoes in the studios. Day to day, I plan moves I'm making. Back in Covent Garden, popping and breaking. Grabbing the most of the world was laughing and saying it's a phase. See what my finger says? Jumping on the buses cause I don't drive a car. Step by step, head to toe and neck. It all depends on the record on the deck. No Steve Nigel is phenomenal. Plus I got them all going insane. Mars a marathon, not a Samaritan. From the UK and not an American. Cars are parking, dogs are barking. Things are flying, huh? I'm lying. Heads are forever bumping. And amateurs are dropping. There ain't no stopping. Been through war times of bad patches. Never play games with fire or matches. Or you're about to get burned. Not the sinister, fuck the prime minister. Tiptoeing, I know the way I'm going. Kicking and you're knowing that you're lacking the flowing. Minds are blowing, I know exactly where I'm heading. And never putting heads to bed in, that's why. Heads are forever bumping. You know heads are forever bumping. Hey yo people, get them with the fist. The motherfuckers all around the world had me pissed. Hey yo people, get them with the fist. The motherfuckers all around the world had a fist.
Thought you had me, didn't you?
Scratch. Got No Sleep Nigel in the studio tonight, via the joys of Skype, of course. And that was Jump Around, London Posse. And you also heard Blade there, obviously Nigel was very involved with in the 90s and beyond. So we were just chatting off air while those tunes were playing about where we're going to progress with the interview, because we're going to kind of come to a close over the next sort of quarter of an hour or so. So something I wanted to discuss was you've worked on a lot of different styles, a lot of different sort of sub-genres, but still based around larger genres over the last 15 years or so that probably a lot of people that know you from the early days don't know about. Do you want to just discuss some of the stuff you've worked on, some of the artists you've worked with, and what you've been doing over the last sort of 15 years?
Almost 25 years, really, isn't it?
I'm on about sort of...
Yeah, last 15 years, actually. Yeah, of course. From about mid-90s.
From about mid-90s, because everyone's quite familiar with your early 90s stuff and your late 80s stuff.
Which kind of established me and kind of took me around a few places. Like, I ended up in Era, Ireland. Dublin, working with a band called Scary Era, and we did an album which the results of which weren't released until a couple of years back, when they brought out a CD called The Scary Era, which is a good thing to check out, actually. Also, I went to Belgium and worked with the top Belgian hip-hop band, De Puta Madre.
Yeah.
And, of course, my longest-running kind of loyalist what artists that work with me have been The Herbalizer.
Yeah.
And also, under different names, the bands that Johnny Cuba's been in. Like, at the moment, he's with Soundsci, which got, you know, their first EP or mini album, as I would say, has had quite a good reaction recently. But he was in Dynamic Syncopation, and also DSP were his the same group, actually, or same production crew, under different names. And they even managed to get Chill Rob G out of the cobwebs and do a couple of tracks with him.
Blimey, yeah.
And you haven't, yeah, I mean, like, you should check their stuff out.
Yeah, I must admit, I mean, something that we often discuss on the show and in the forums and stuff is the fact that since the sort of mid-90s, a lot of people really sort of lost interest in hip-hop and where it was going and whatever. And, you know, I'll be the first to admit that my knowledge of what was going on over the 15 years is 1% of what I know up to the mid-90s.
Yeah, there isn't the same sort of thread running. I mean, like, I did an album with MCM that never came out.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've got a cassette version of it here. You know, it's a lost album. You know, it was just like we spent ages in the studio.
When was that you did that then?
That would have been around the same time as I met the Creators, when I was first doing stuff with the Creators, when you remember their first album?
I must admit, I haven't got
The Creator has a master plan.
I know it. I know of the album, but I don't have it.
I think that must have been about 94, 95. You know, I might be wrong there. I'm really bad at dates. Do you want me to run off and see if I can find my copy of The Creator?
Right. I think this comes to the rescue yet again.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah,
he's on here because I saw it when I was looking through earlier.
Yeah. But we used the same studio there, which was in Kentish Town.
Yeah.
Just up the road from where the Town and Country Club or whatever it's called.
Oh, yeah. I went in there and saw the crowd destroy the venue when I went to see Wu-Tang Clan or someone, and it went berserk in there one night. There you go.
It's called The Forum now, isn't it?
The Forum's a different venue, I think.
There's a Clapham Forum, but what used to be the Town and Country Club is now called The Forum.
I didn't know that. So are you talking about... hold on, The Creators... The Creators have a master plan. According to this, was 1996 on Blindside Recordings.
Was it that late?
According to this.
Wow. I thought that was much earlier. That's what... I guess that makes sense. That does make sense. So, I wonder when I did that Scary Era stuff then.
Was that after that? Because, I mean, I haven't seen
I would
that.
Have thought 94, 95, something like that.
Maybe that's not been updated on here. I can't see it.
Scary Era? No, that was released much later. It was due to be another lost album. Like, Island Records put the money up and then they dropped the project. But we'd done all the recording.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a disaster, what was going on around the music, but
incidentally, right, you mentioned about this album with MCM, right? Was it called The Gospel by any chance? Or is that completely brand new? Because I actually contacted him recently to get him to do a PA at the Christmas event we're doing. And, I mean, he can't do it for whatever reason. I only got hold of his PA guy. But he has recorded a new album, and I wondered if it's if that's got anything to do with you, now that you mentioned that that was unreleased.
Why does that ring a bell, though? I mean, I think the last stuff I did with him that was released, actually got released, was on, was it a label called Blue Planet?
I don't know. I mean, he did a track with Big Ted that I've got on 12. What's it called now? It's quite a funky, slow, like down-tempo track. On Jazz Fudge, I think. Around about, that must have been about 96, not, maybe 98 or something.
I might have, you know, like this is where it gets a bit confusing because I might have even mixed that if it was done with Jazz Fudge. It depends who the producer was because I did some of Adam's stuff. I did stuff for Jazz Fudge for with Mark B. But I don't know whether I did any other stuff. Anyone with any other producers, because that, I mean, that's the other thing, is like I did the Mark B and Blade album in that period, which actually was possibly, you know, the most high profile, most successful.
Oh yeah, I mean that must have been about what, 2004 or something, or was it, oh no, what am I talking about? God, my memory, I'll tell you what, it's terrible. Like the last sort of 15 years of hip hop has sort of just molded into one big foggy memory.
Yes, I mean, and I think there's something significant occurs from the beginning of the 90s through to the 2000s is an important period in the whole culture of studios, because, and the creators are a good example of what happened. Originally, we started off working in these venues, you know, like another studio I used regularly. In, you know, as we moved on, when Cold Storage shut down and we moved on from Joe's Garage, we went to a place called Odessa Wolf, which was actually in where the, you know, Surrey Quays, you know, and that was actually situated where a real place called Odessa Wolf was.
Yeah.
And was right on the banks of the Thames, you know, like literally the window of the studio was out straight onto the water. You just walk out on a balcony and there's water below you and Canary Wharf across the other side. I worked there with the creators. That's where I first worked with Herbalizer. But the whole culture was changing. People were going, look, I'm forking out £300 for a day. That's like my fee plus a fee for the studio. And that's pretty cheap, really, for, you know, as I said, I mean, the only reason people were still using the studios was because they could afford to, because the cost of a studio had really gone down in London. Now, Odessa Wolf was different because the guy that ran it knew all about maintenance. So it was a nice studio for me to work in because everything worked. And he was also always picking up some nice bits of old gear. Yeah. But what happened was that creators looked at this £300 that they might say goodbye to, or £400, going, we could be sort of on our way to buying a microphone with that money. And slowly but surely people started to cotton on to this, that, you know, all they needed was kind of a decent mixing desk and then get some bits and pieces together and work at home or have a studio somewhere.
I mean,
like, if the Herbalizer.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly had what I would class as the ability to record to maybe something that you could actually master from and release by about 98. I had like a decent PC and whatever, but that's before I went onto Mac, you know. When Windows 98 was first like a stable operating system to use for music, that's when I first had something that I would consider to be worthwhile. And then I moved on to a Mac with like a G4 Mac with like a little Pro Tool setup. Digi 001 and that, and that's what I would first class as being. I spent like 400 quid on a mic as well, and had a Mackie desk and stuff. And so, yeah, what, 12 years ago?
Yeah, and basically everyone was doing that. They were, you know, there was a lot of those Mackie desks around. I have my issue with Mackie desks.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, they kind of sound a bit thin. Like, I far prefer over that period the desk that I really liked. You know, if people wanted to get a budget desk, I would always recommend them to get the Ghost, like the Soundcraft Ghost, because it just sounded so much better, and the EQ on it was gave you so much more scope and very good desks. Recently, we saw a replacement Ghost come into the Herbalizer studio, and I would say that they've downed the spec of it now. I don't think it's quite the same thing as it used to be. So if you I think a secondhand Ghost would actually be better than a new Ghost now. Like, the new Ghost look a bit cheaper made.
Is there a specific model number or anything that you know, just I'm thinking of people that are listening to this that, you know, are listening to the interview because of your engineering knowledge. You know, is there a specific model or year that they should look for?
I don't know if I could specify it down to a specific year, but an old Ghost desk, you know, Soundcraft Ghost would be better than buying a brand new one, I think, now. The Herbalizer went through three Ghosts, though, and the reason was because their old studio used to be in an oil refinery, which was actually gushing out fumes, which used to come up through the studio and eat away the desk.
Yeah.
Whereas I think most other people's lasted the full course.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, what that's done is it's left them in a situation where when he went to buy a new one, rather than sort of, you know, because the kind of parts that are in these budget desks, they're not really replaceable or cleanable or anything like that. Yeah. When you actually look at it. But when he got the new one, like the little push button selector buttons on it, they all just seem really, you know, you press it down and it gets jammed. When you press it, it doesn't pop up. Where when you get one of the old ones, you can tell, because it's kind of a bit more of a silky smooth action. And it looks different as well. It just looks a little bit better made. Like, the new ones look a bit cheap and nasty to me. It's just not the same desk, and I felt like the new one didn't quite sound as good. It was kind of okay as a backup to everything else, but I don't feel 100% about it in the way, like, to me the old Ghosts were like they sounded like an old much more expensive desk, and the EQ, most budget desks, including the Mackie, kind of are a bit miserly on what they offer you on an EQ.
Yeah.
For instance, you always get the high shelf and the low shelf, you know, like the just the tops and bass.
Mm.
That's just like the shelf, you know, like you more bass. But then often on budget desks, you'll get one parametric. And what it will do is it will go like something like 400k up to 10k or maybe 20k. You know, from 500 hertz up to sort of 20 kilohertz. And that's no good. I mean, like, what if you want to use some... Oh, yeah, and there's also the Q, isn't there? There's the, you know, the width. The bandwidth.
Yeah.
So to make it a really fine adjustment or something like that, and you'll have one of those and it won't be a full range. Whereas on the Ghost, you actually get two parametrics that sweep right across the range, top to bottom.
Mm.
And they share a lot of the same frequencies as well, so that you can use, you know, it's really flexible. You can get some really nice stuff really quickly on it.
Yeah.
Because like one of my favorite ways of working, especially with computers, is if somebody's got a nice sound card where, you know, you've got like 24 outs or something like that, and use it like tape.
Yeah.
And just use the computer for recording and playback, and basically like a tape machine, you know. But of course, when it comes to, you know, there's a certain things that work magic with plugins, and for instance, putting an echo on something, it's ideal. It's ideal to do your echoes in software, but then bring out all your drums and EQ them and put them through some nice compressors and get them on a group and stuff like that. That's where you want the analog gear.
I'd say, I mean, we've gotten into a little bit of technical depth here. Probably, you know, a lot of stuff that's going to be interest to people that are listening to this because they know what you've done in terms of engineering, right? You've got a forum, haven't you, where people can go online and get into a bit of depth about recording tips and gear and stuff. Do you want to just talk about that and the address and stuff quickly?
Yeah, the easy way to find it is to go onto Google and put my name, No Sleep Nigel, up, and I think it'll probably come up sort of top or second to top. But the web address is one word, spaces the place, dot Probords, that's probords.com. So that's spaces the place dot probords.com.
Lovely. I mean, I'm a member on there myself, and I haven't really posted too much in there because of being so manic all the time. But so anybody listening to this from an engineering perspective, I'm sure that would be a fantastic resource to ask. You know, I mean, would you say these days that it is possible to get, could you get the same sound in software, just one computer and software, that you could get 20 years ago with analog gear?
I don't know about that. You could have a good go. I mean there's various different things, different technologies that have come out to go towards doing stuff like that. I mean, there's things that kind of emulate the sound of tape now. I've been investigating plugins that do that. And also, there's this whole thing of convolution. Because the thing about tape is the way it sort of... Yeah, I think people don't really go for the sort of high-quality end of what tape offers and analog offers, which is a whole nother area of discussion, really. But
yeah,
one of the things that I have come across is that one of the projects I did with Blade, one of the EPs we did later on, I'm trying to think which particular one it was. Can we get onto Discogs and I'll tell you for certain? Because there was one particular EP he did, and we decided we were going to keep the analog line. So, albeit that we were using an S950 to do the music, so we were using digital, but of course you tune things, so nothing's kind of solid bitrate. And of course the voices are analog, they're going through good microphones, and then I played bass on one of the tracks, so that was analog. And we recorded to 2-inch tape. We mixed down onto 1/4-inch at I think 30 inches per second. Took that to a cutting room and made vinyl from it. So we kept what they call the analog line, which is like you've kept what I mean. What that means is you're actually keeping the molecular integrity of the sound. When sound is made, you're vibrating molecules. When you hit a microphone diaphragm, you're vibrating molecules. When the electrical signal is sent via subatomic particles. You know, it's electrons passing through the wire, so it's still at the molecular level. Also, you pick up a bit of noise. That's where the hiss comes from, is because you're using mediums, and so forth. When by preserving the analog line, you're basically keeping it on a molecular level. When you record stuff with digital, you lose a lot of stuff, you know. So there's something sort of living and breathing about it. And the interesting thing was, when we brought this record out, which I should really name, shouldn't I? The Way It Has To Be, Bass, No Sleep, Nigel. Yeah, it's Rhyme Bomb. You remember that one?
Yeah, I've got the 12 of that. Yeah.
Now, a couple of people got back to us and they said they couldn't work it out why, but cutting with that record, they could cut with that record for hours and hours on end. And that's the thing, is digital sound is more tiring to the human brain because it's not the same thing as natural sound. You know, you've actually turned something to a load of numbers and then spat it back out again. And in that process, something's gone missing. And although it sounds much the same, it's slightly more difficult for the brain to reconstruct, and it's slightly more fatiguing.
This is some true depth of sound analysis we've gone into now. It's wicked. I'm really, like, I don't even want to talk. I could listen to this all day.
But I mean, that is not even about whether it sounds better or worse or cleaner or dirty. You know, like, people talk about tape compression, which I think's pretty much a myth, actually. As soon as you start getting into tape compression, you're talking about over-recording. And I actually found that there wasn't a lot of, you know, and I've discussed this with other engineers, is it's a bit of a myth, really.
Yeah.
The attempts to get it are probably going to cause distortion, unnecessary distortion and things like that, and don't benefit the medium. You know, like, actually, you should be trying to make something sound good. If you want distortion on something, by all means, try doing it that way. But it's not the regular way to work, and you know, like, without going into the whole rules of how to use tape and how to use digital and everything like that, I mean, it's not normal to use tape like that. And not advisable, not if you want to end up doing anything you want with it afterwards. Do you know what I mean? If you record stuff down, you record stuff within sort of parameters that give you scope to do anything you want with it afterwards, so that you can decide you don't want tape compression, or you don't want that distortion. You've got that as well. You can always add distortion afterwards, can't you?
Yeah.
There are plugins that sound like tape. And I was going to say, there's also this whole new area in plugins about convolution. And I think there's a couple of places where you can get convolutions of tape sound, which I've experimented with. And the last, it's really funny how you can go around and you can find nice old spring reverbs, convolution spring reverbs and things like that in various places, and maybe speaker systems and all manner of convolutions other than just the normal reverbs that you find.
Yeah.
But when it comes to a convolution of the sound, what something sounds like when it goes on tape, you know, the difference between before and after. One guy did it years ago in 16-bit. And those are the only ones you can find on the net, because it seems like there's a sort of conspiracy that everyone that's got a Studer tape machine has decided that, no, we can't let people have those convolutions because that would be one convolution too many, you know, keeping it close to their chest. So yeah. I'm going to be doing some of my own soon. I've got a Studer tape machine here.
Okay.
A two-track machine for mastering stuff, which I should be mastering some things on this quite soon. But also I can do tape transfers into digital at home.
Yeah.
We're going to do some convolutions on this machine, and I might publish them.
So if I think we really need to try and wind things up a little bit now. If you could suggest, like, to maybe someone that's listening who wants to get into production, if you could suggest a bit of a rig, you know, for someone who wants to get into it, bearing in mind someone might only have a few hundred quid, but they want a basic recording setup, what would be your advice for them to go? Like, second hand or new or PC or Mac or just hardware? Or what would you go for if, you know, you were advising someone?
It almost depends on who it is. You know, some of the most straightforward answers say, "Oh, just get Logic."
Yeah.
For instance, it's gonna, if you haven't done things the way I've done, learn everything one thing at a time, Logic could be just like, "Oh, what's all this?" Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, somebody, but you know, because really, you have to learn how to use the stuff. You have to learn about what recording is. You have to learn about drum machines. You have to learn about beat making. You can do all of that stuff with a program like Logic, but it might just seem like a hell of a lot of things all at once. I mean, you've got to give yourself time, like I did on that first track, Round My Brothers, all those years ago, like 11 days on one track.
Mm.
Basically, it was more to do with learning than it was to do that the track needed 11 days. I did a lot of experimentation and doing something more than once, trying to work out what would be the best way to do it.
I think one of the problems these days with people coming into production and stuff now is there is such a myriad of stuff out there, like, you know, the likes of Fruity Loops on the sort of lower end up to sort of £10,000 Pro Tools rigs, and you know, there are artists that I'm aware of that make tracks that sound wicked, and all I've used is like a cheap secondhand £50 PC and a snide copy of Fruity Loops, and they've got the same results that people that have spent £10,000 on a Pro Tools setup have got. You know,
yeah.
I mean, you and I were when we were sort of, you know, talking the other day, you mentioned about the Avid 888, you know, the DigiDesign 888. And after that discussion, I had a look on eBay and there was a guy selling a Mirador G4, dual core G4 Mac. And it went for £47, right? You can get a copy of OS 9 for nothing. And
yep.
You can pick the 888 up, the card and the breakout box and all the cables for less than £50.
Right.
You know, and that comes with software. So really, you could get a classic system with a nice, you know, piece of software for it for under 100 quid and have a great recording setup.
Yeah, that would be a good way to go as well. You know, those 888s are good. They're obviously DigiDesign or Avid, whatever you want to call it now. And you need Pro Tools running in the background, but you can actually use Logic on top of it if you can get an old copy of Logic.
Well, if anybody wants an old copy of Logic, just let me know and I'll sort you out. I've got all of that from my early days of recording, no problem.
Right.
Okay, well, I think we need to try and, you know, sort of wrap up a little bit. There's something which I do, a couple of things I wanted to discuss just quickly. Well, I think the first thing, right, before I finish this is, what's the future hold in store for you? I mean, are you going to just continue? I mean, do you still work full time as an engineer? I don't even know.
It's allegedly my full time job.
I mean,
amongst other things, you know, it's been kind of a hectic last 2 years where there's been sort of personal stuff has been getting
sure.
in the way of work and that. But that's sort of come to a conclusion. I surprisingly find myself with, you know, like at this point when I expected things to be fizzling out because of all this revolution in music that's going on, thanks, you know, all thanks to the MP3, has taken all the glory out of bringing out a record, you know,
and, I know,
and sales and things like that, which in some respects has had a good effect on music in terms of, you know, commercial demand and that, because it's kind of brought, it's kind of even the thing, you know. You have to realize that with independent labels, even independent labels were dependent on majors, because the music industry, basically the axis upon which the music industry sold product in the form of records and that were big factories, and those big factories were used even by the small labels, and that's not true anymore. There's no need for major record labels anymore in that respect. You know, you might as well be a management for all it matters anymore. There doesn't need to be the record company anymore. Anyone can publish. If you can make an MP3 on your computer, you can make a record.
Yeah.
Which has kind of taken the value of it away, but I'm saying that because I expected, you know, like, not to be doing as much as I do, but I'm still kind of working. But in terms of things that I'm doing, aside from the projects I get, you know, still new up and coming kind of hip hop. I did an album earlier this year, actually. I just checked my messages on one of the breaks, and a guy called Beat Tricks from Swansea, was just saying that his album's going to be coming out soon. That I did earlier in the year, which you'll probably find him on MySpace or something like that if you want to find out, but you'll hear about him soon. I've been doing a new album with Sound Psy, who they got quite a good critical reception for their mini LP, as they like to call it, or EP. No, they call it an EP and I call it a mini LP.
That was 2009, wasn't it? You worked on there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. And helped out. I was one of the judges on the remix competition.
Okay.
If you remember that. And I'm now working on new album of theirs. Really only getting underway with it. And I'll probably be adding a few bass lines to that as well. I've got my bass right next to me there. I can see.
Well, there's just a couple of other things I want to ask you about, and then we'll have to wrap up tonight. The first thing is, when I was talking to Blade the other night, and I mentioned I was interviewing you, he asked me to ask you about the water fight that happened in the recording studio.
It was fantastic. You remember I was talking about Odessa Wolf being out on the docks? Now, Odessa Wolf was in a building that was originally going to be a lot of different businesses, and then I think they decided they were going to convert it into flats because, you know, like, because the situation in Surrey Quays. So as each business disappeared, it wasn't replaced, so we were in a huge building with nobody else in there. It was all these empty rooms and the doors were open, we could go in into these rooms and kind of, you know, so somebody found some what do they call them, those big super squirters, isn't it?
Oh yeah.
Well, we found a couple of those in the studio, so we filled them up and played a bit of a real-time Metal Gear Solid type game where we're around corridors looking for each other.
Who was, how many of you were doing that? Were you,
it was basically three of us, I think. It was the the tape op, Giles, who sort of followed us from, I think you'll find his name on some of the records as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Blade and myself. Was there anybody else involved? There probably were some other people, but we used the building and also the surrounds of the building,
yeah.
Going around looking, you know, like seeing who could be wet. You know, it was a nice hot day as well. Nice. So if you got soaked in about 20 minutes, you were dry again. It just wasn't a bother.
He said to mention the time as well when he bought studio time, came in and then sat there and just said bollocks to the recording. Let's play PlayStation all day, apparently.
Yeah, and we played Tekken 2.
That's it, Tekken.
He had to remind me about that. I was talking to him the other day and he mentioned that. And I said, but that makes sense because, yeah, Tekken 2 was a favourite of mine. Like, I used to play that around another friend of mine's house a lot. So that would have been a good game to play.
Well, Nigel, it's been a pleasure talking to you tonight. I mean, you know, we've kind of stumbled loosely through what you've been up to in the last 25 years. I know we haven't gone into huge depth with a lot of the stuff that I've no doubt people are craving to hear. But as we've discussed, maybe we can, you know, get together again at some point in the future. And there is something that I do definitely want to do, which is raid your DAT collection and get all those... Yeah. Lost gems off the cutting room floor or whatever, and you know, have some discussions about what I'm doing next year with releasing records and see if we can maybe get something together.
Yeah,
you
of
never
course.
Know.
And yeah, if you know, if anyone's got any questions, then maybe they can sort of field another little, you know, because yeah, we've left lots of stones unturned.
Yeah, exactly. Today.
There's too much to cover, you know. This is really like, you know, we could have just dealt with that classic period for the whole thing, you know, like that sort of late 80s, early 90s period, when basically that was the really happening period, and everything else just happened as a result of that. So, but we've kind of skirted over everything, so which is fair enough. And you know, there's a lot of names that haven't even been mentioned.
Sure, yeah. Well,
but, which, well, yeah, it might be worthwhile just, you know, getting some questions from people that that are listening to this now, and we'll have a go at answering some of them.
Well, what I'm planning on doing is I'm going to put a post up in the Heroes of UK Hip Hop forum about this show, and I'm you know, then going to just basically say to people, give me some feedback, respond to this, and if there's stuff that we've touched on that people want to expand on, then, you know, we'll get some questions together and we'll get together again at some point in the future over a nice cup of Rosie and, you know... Yeah, or 10, knowing you and me. And yeah, we'll go through it. So it's been a pleasure talking to you tonight. Is there a track that you can think of that you might want to finish up on tonight? Something which is a real prominent track in your mind that you really enjoyed working on or brings back good memories for you? Something that we can finish the show out with tonight?
I have the sound of tracks, Herbalizer tracks, but I don't know what some of the titles are. But the blend, I think, that's probably quite a good one to go on. That's quite kind of early on. That's from Blow Your Headphones. So,
okay,
that probably fits the agenda, actually.
Lovely. Well, let's round out the show with this track. This is off the Blow Your Headphones LP by Herbalizer. Nigel, it's been a pleasure talking to you today. And,
well, thanks for having me.
Yep, you know, and let's kind of keep an eye on the forums and stuff. People, get your questions in, and maybe we'll try and get together again at some point in the not too distant future.
Yeah, and join my forum and start asking questions. It's been a bit quiet there the last few years. So yeah,
there you go. spacestheplace.proboards.com. And,
but there is a wealth of knowledge there as well already. I think people still come and read it, but always feel free to join up and ask new questions.
Yeah.
Like, It's been so quiet, sometimes I don't look at there for a week. So don't, just because you don't get an answer straight away doesn't mean you won't get an answer.
Well, that was the original way that I actually got in touch with you, was through there. And I didn't even realise that it was still going, because I didn't get any response for a while. And then eventually you sort of, the messages start to creep in, and here we are.
Fortunately, even if you don't look back there, anyone that leaves a question there, I can always get back to them, as long as the email address they sign up with is one that they regularly look at. Because as the admin of the forum, I can see your email address, if no one else can. So I can always get back to people and say, come back and have a look.
Yeah. Well,
this is how I got in contact with you, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So let's finish off with this track. This is
called
The
Blend. Thanks for having me.
Yep. It's been a pleasure. Have you got any closing words?
Anyone you want to thank? Get some sleep now and then.
Yeah.
Obviously. Yeah. Yeah. Don't think that it's all about not sleeping. We never actually talked about my sleeping habits, but get some sleep.
Yeah. So I think my friend Nigel on the end here is only about 25. He's just had an hard life. So. Still, anyway, okay, well, let's finish up with this. Thanks for listening to the show tonight. I hope you enjoyed it, and watch out in the Heroes of UK Hip Hop Forum for the post about this, and get your questions in, and we'll get together with Nigel again soon. So back to a live show next week, and thanks for listening. Big ups to the Freestyle FM and Sensi FM fam, also to Rare Kind Records. That's it. I think we're all done. Just a big respect as well to stylewarrior.co.uk, where you can grab all your t-shirts and stuff. And don't forget, we've got the Christmas jam coming up on the Saturday, the 11th of December. So watch out in the forum for posts and stuff regarding that, and to get your tickets. All right, so that's it. Let's get into this. Thanks for listening. Take care. See you next week. Peace.
Got subjects locked in my cerebral cortex. On Ampex tape, I'm circulating like a vortex. Check out my text, I use a synonym, it's inspect. Mentally badgering MCs with my dialect when I inject. Memory cell mode is retrospect, you recollect. True genuine skills I resurrect. Direct and live from the 212, 718, and 516 area throughout. Borough to borough, state to state, world thorough wide. I ride, driving mass tracks to genocide. Verbal divider, the brain infiltrator. Breaking fracture, a sucker MC, structure delegator. The pen and the pad and the microphone get blessed. Witness with ease now how I digress. Brothers are busy grabbing text while I apex. Verbal back shots coming without the latex. Watch the caption spin as the wax begin. How I'm rapping in, then hit the backspin. Now end first verse in the blend. Herbalized the resource, done it again. One of the three, the natural R-E to the source in the B-L-E-N-D. City to city, state to state, borough to borough, NYC to worldwide, rock the row. One of the three, the natural R-E to the source in the B-L-E-N-D. City to city, state to state, borough to borough, NYC to worldwide. See me and rhymes alike, tooth to picks, sides to kicks, chops to six, seat to six, hardness to bricks, chest to fix, corruption to politics, sticks to stones to six, not opposites, flips, to cakes, beefs to steaks, bones to breaks, decks to tapes, good food to plates, movies to dates, cities to states, O's to cakes, shaking MCs off their mics like earth to quakes. But now the hand of fate dealt me the higher intellect. Connect verbs, dissect words down to letters. W serves as the first repetition. H lines and curves take second position. A plays the third, the fourth brings the T. Say it two times, so you get one of the three, the natural R-E to the source and the B-L-E-N-D. The blend. One of the three, the natural R-E to the source of the B-L-E-N-D. City to city, state to state, borough to borough, NYC to worldwide, rock the row. One of the three, the natural R-E to the source of the B-L-E-N-D. City to city, state to state, borough to borough, NYC to worldwide. My verbal attacks react to mental stimulation. I'm leaving gaping contusions caused by lyrical abrasion. No pausing, no waiting. I play the plus and start and getting shining like the sun. Lyrical patterns double up on the one, like the name when exposed to flame. I combust like aerosol, a kerosene contained. Deaf ears turned, the conversation severed. I set it off like lies, see, forget, indebted. Forget it, it only happens because you let it. I move, swift tongue, slice, cruise, beheaded. I said it again, so let the repetition end. Resource and herbalizer in the blend. The B-L-E-N-D-N-D. One of the three, the natural R-E to the source of the B-L-E-N-D. City to city, state, borough to borough, N-Y-C to worldwide, rock the row. One of the three, the natural R-E to the source of the B-L-E-N-D. City to city, state, borough to borough, N-Y-C to worldwide. One of the three, the natural R-E to the source of the B-L-E-N-D. City to city, state, borough to borough, N-Y-C to worldwide, rock the row. One of the three, the natural R-E to the source of the B-L-E-N-D. City to city, state, borough to borough, N-Y-C to worldwide.
Respects to No Sleep Nigel, hopefully catch up with him again next year. Back to a live show next week. Also, watch out because we're shortly only going to be broadcasting on Cincy FM. Big respect to Freestyle FM family for their support since the last 8 months. So we're only going to be rolling with Cincy from now on. So make sure you adjust your dials just to Cincy.fm for future Disco Scratch podcasts and radios and tape rips and yada yada yada. Take it easy. Peace.